Completely Conspicuous, episode 325, April 29th, 2014. Welcome back to Completely Conspicuous. I'm your host, Jay Kumar. This week, I've got part one of my conversation with guest Rick Doobie as we try to figure out how the hell Christopher Cross ever became a pop star. I've also got music from Bedroom Eyes, Hymnals, and Kinski. As always, please send any comments, questions, or Donald Sterling insults to j.kumar@gmail.com. Also, please check out Completely Conspicuous at comconcast.blogspot.com and on Facebook. And you can follow me on Twitter at coomdog. You can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. Now here's Bedroom Eyes with Wild Sins.
Oh,
And now, on to my conversation with Rick Doobie.
It's Saturday night. We're here with Rick Doobie. In the Doobie headquarters. The headquarters of More Lost Time.
Yeah. How's Shrewsbury, Massachusetts.
Indeed. The Shrew. as they call it around
Shrewsbury,
here.
Shrewsbury, Massachusetts, as I've been told, was named for an overpopulation of shrews.
No kidding.
Yeah, and in fact, the shrews occasionally... I've never had shrews in my house, to the best of my knowledge, but my father-in-law has.
They're still around.
Yeah, there's a lot of shrews
in
this town.
So they have not tamed the shrews.
No, apparently, okay. Apparently not. We once saw a shrew in our backyard by the...
What is a shrew?
It's like a mouse. It looks almost exactly like a mouse. I think unless you know a shrew, you wouldn't know one from a mouse, like, but if you're familiar with...
What do they do differently? Do they eat stuff?
I couldn't... You know what? I think... In fact, they don't have the same appetites as a mouse. So, like, shrews aren't going to invade your kitchen and, you know, eat through your bag of flour. You know, they don't eat nuts like a squirrel, but they do, you know, eat outdoors. But they will burrow in your house. They'll live in your insulation and run around in your ceiling and in your walls. They're super loud, and they kind of smell.
Yeah. And that's this week's topic, the shrew. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
And then, of course, what's funny is right here in central Massachusetts, you have at four points, you've got Northborough, Southborough, Westborough, and Shrewsbury.
There you go.
and that's my town.
There you go. Well, we are here to talk about a great musical artist. But first off, you know, I always like to give you a little plug for your show, More Lost Time.
Yeah, it's always nice to have you over here to talk about music, and my podcast is called More Lost Time, where I play records from my collection. I've been collecting records since I was about 13 years old, and that always makes it sound like I still collect records, which is a little inaccurate. I don't collect a whole lot of records anymore. Sometimes I do.
You find something you like.
Yeah, in fact, there's a guy in my office... You know, what you're always reading about these days is this new vinyl resurgence.
Right. Yeah.
And there's a guy in my office who is completely a advocate of the vinyl resurgence.
Nouveau vinyl riche.
Definitely. Yeah. And one of the ways he's, you know, really sort of different from me is that he's real big on the quality. You know, he's one of these guys who has spent a lot of money on his stereo system. He spends a lot of money on records. And
like our old buddy Joel Karp.
And he loves to talk about the quality of the sound. Right, and right. So, and he's figured out that, you know, me in the office, he's figured out that I'm a record guy. He's figured, right. You know, and so he loves to come in, he talks records with me. But he always wants to talk about, like, fidelity and the ohms of his crossover. I don't know what I have no idea what he's talking about, and I just nod. Yeah, that's cool, you know. But one thing he did tell me about a couple weeks ago, he came in really excited on a Monday morning to tell me about the record fair in, maybe it was Woburn, I don't remember exactly, except when I, as a teenager, I used to go to the record fair in, at the time, Salem, New Hampshire. It would happen maybe every 8 weeks. You'd go to the Holiday Inn in Salem, New Hampshire, and all the record dealers from all over New England would converge. They'd all, you know, they'd buy a table or whatever. And it what the advantage was for a record collector is it was like going to 40 record stores in one day in an afternoon by going to a single place. And the penalty, of course, was I think a lot of those guys would raise their prices.
Yeah.
But if you were smart, you knew that the strategy, the custom, was you didn't have to pay any of those prices. You could talk them down. If you found a few things that you wanted and it all summed up to, you know, $40, you would offer them 30 or whatever. Anyway, the point is that this guy in my office, he said, you got to come to this record fair. And I didn't realize those things still happen.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to the next one. I didn't realize I don't know if they ever went away, but they're, at the very least, they're happening.
Well,
still.
I think, you know, now with the whole resurgence, it's just, you know, I'm sure these record dealers are like, we can make a shitload of money off these jamokes.
But I've got this list of, like you mentioned, I've got this list of stuff that I would like to play on More Lost Time. There are things that I'm always hearing.
And you play rare or, you know, sort of unreleased or just sort of, you know, out of print music on your show. Readily commercially available.
Yeah, and what often happens is I hear things on the internet, or I hear things that I want to play, and what I've done in recent years is I've seeked out like compilations that things have appeared on. You and I talked recently about, we found a record, you and I, on the internet called Sunshine Woman by a guy named Tom Hartman,
right? Yeah.
Who was in a 60s act called the Aerovons. And I went hunting around for that, and I couldn't really find it. What I did find was a compilation called, Bonehead Wonders Volume 2.
Bonehead Wonders?
Yeah, it's like a 70s, it's a compilation of like 70s stoner rock.
Nice.
And that was on it. And it's
That's a great song, too.
Yeah, it's like an indie import CD, and there's four of them in the series, but Volume 2 has Sunshine Woman by Tom Hartman on it.
Which you heard if you listened to the last time Rick was on the show, and we discussed Tom Hartman, and we also discussed Edward Bear, the obscure Canadian act.
Well, and the reason the conversation started is because we were talking about Canadian acts, and I thought Tom Hartman was a Canadian act.
Well, and he also, that song also sounds a lot like Canadian band Sloan's Money City Maniacs song, which came out almost 30 years later.
That might be why I thought that. Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, that's the way I've got the song now. But I would like to find a 7-inch single of Sunshine Woman, because the B-side is called A Little More, and that's a pretty decent song too. And so I'm going to go to this record fair in May and see if I can scare up a copy of that.
So where is that?
It might be Dedham.
Dedham? Yeah. I don't mind checking that out.
I'm going to be honest, I don't even know where Dedham is.
It's right outside Boston.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to go there in first week in May, and I'm going to look for a copy of that.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's fun. Well, anyways, I encourage you to subscribe to Rick's show. You can find it on iTunes and at morelasttime.com.
Morelasttime.com.
Yeah.
It has the show. And the most recent episode was a tribute to the Cars for no other reason than I've been wanting to do one ever since I started the show. I thought it'd be interesting.
It was, yeah.
And maybe even a little funny to do a tribute to the Cars. And
with an interview with the Cars.
Yeah, I cooked up an interview with the Cars from old quotes. But I can tell you that it is unequivocally the least popular episode of the podcast in 3 years,
which surprises me, because like people know that, I guess they listen to your show for the rare stuff, so they figure like the Cars are too mainstream or something. I don't know.
Nobody likes the Cars.
Yes, I like the Cars.
I even went out of my way to make like a special logo of the show and everything.
I thought it was great, man. I was like, shit, this is the one that's gonna hook people.
I thought it. You know, I played Hotel Queenie, which is this really great song. It's sort of it sounds like the Cars, but it also it's a track from before they got their first record deal with Elektra, and it sounds like this really great mix between, the way I think of it, it sounds like a mix between the Stooges and Roxy Music.
Yeah. No, it's great.
And it's a really really good, it's a decent song, but a really good recording. And it's a very, if you have any interest in the Cars, it's a really exciting recording. But nobody wants to hear this episode of the podcast.
I guess I always liked the Cars, but it's interesting to hear kind of like where they came from. And, you know, they sounded a lot different before they kind of got, polished to a nice sheen by Roy Thomas Baker.
That's
and
true.
Stuff like that. You know, I mean, they were a pretty interesting band.
It's got a little bit of an edge to it.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's still full of keyboards and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, we're not here to talk about the Cars or Shrewsbury. We're here to talk about,
because that'll drag your podcast down.
That's right. No, we're going to talk about somebody way better, Christopher Cross.
Now, what brings up Christopher Cross in particular? What made you think of him?
I don't know. I was trying to think of, when we do these sort of little song analysis shows, obviously we try to pick usually fairly obscure things, and Christopher Cross, certainly had his moment in the sun, You know, won like I think 5 Grammys for his first album, and you know,
was it that many?
Yeah. Yep, his debut album earned him 5 Grammy Awards. Came out in 1979. But you know, it's I always found him an interesting case because you know you've got this guy, you know, this kind of schlubby guy from San Antonio, who really has kind of an unremarkable voice. I mean, I don't think of his voice as something really, you know, interesting or, you know, technically great, but for whatever reason, he just came out, all of a sudden, he had been in a cover band called Flash in San Antonio, and then all of a sudden, he gets himself a record deal with Warner Brothers, and puts out, this is his first album, called Christopher Cross, and the thing, like, goes through the roof. Granted, you know, he has Michael McDonald helping him out on it, you know, on the first song, Ride Like the Wind, was a big hit, and it kind of just took off from there. But, I mean, you know, he really kind of epitomized sort of, you know, wuss rock at its apex, I guess. But, you know,
So was he, you talk about him being in a cover band, you're not in a cover band and then just hook up with, you know, studio musicians. Like from the Doobie Brothers, was he a songwriter? Was he a studio musician? What was his
connection with
like the Hollywood world, the L.A. world? Because like the Doobie Brothers, that's L.A. Is that L.A. or New York music?
I think they're West Coast.
Okay, yeah. So what's his connection? What was his West Coast?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, like I'm guessing somehow he got it. You know, he got himself heard to get a record deal. You know, and then whoever the producer was, maybe is the one who kind of
that first record has a very distinctive sound.
Producer is Michael Omardian, which is a name which is familiar.
That's the guy who produced the first record.
Yeah.
And what else did that guy do?
I will tell you what that guy did. What genres include contemporary Christian, pop rock, and R&B?
Now we're getting somewhere.
He spent 5 years on the A&R staff of ABC Dunhill Records as a producer, artist, and arranger. Subsequently hired by Warner Brothers as a producer and A&R staff member. Has produced albums for Clint Black, Michael Bolton, Debbie Boone, Steve Camp, Peter Cetera, Amy Grant, Whitney Houston, the Imperials, the Jacksons, Cliff Richard, Rod Stewart, Donna Summer, and Trisha Yearwood.
That sounds all after the fact, except for possibly Debbie Boone.
He co-produced We Are the World with Quincy Jones.
Hmm.
Okay, he was a founding member of the disco funk act Rhythm Heritage in the 70s.
Okay.
And was a session musician for artists including Steely Dan, The Four Tops, Seals and Crofts, and Loggins and Messina.
Now you're talking about heyday.
Yeah. And since then he's kind of he's put out a lot of Christian music albums under his own name. So he's into that stuff.
So was Christopher Cross a Christian act? Like a Christian act waiting to happen?
I don't know, maybe. Let's see. As a producer, he produced the original soundtrack of Young Frankenstein.
Okay.
That's something cool.
Now, do they stay entwined? Christopher Cross and what's this other guy?
Michael Omartian.
Michael
Omartian. I don't know.
Because the next thing I start to think is, you know, sort of like, do you know Joe Jackson and David Kirschenbaum?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, you know, I start to think about something like that.
Well, before he recorded the Christopher Cross album, he did an album with the Richie Furay Band, that was a dude from the Buffalo Springfield, right?
Yeah.
Dionne Warwick.
Okay, so this guy's somebody plugged in.
Yeah. And then after the Christopher Cross, he did his second album, Another Page. He did She Works Hard for the Money, Donna Summer. Camouflage, Rod Stewart. So, you know, he had some...
Okay.
So he did the next... Yeah, he did the third album, Christopher Cross, Every Turn of the World. So, yeah, he did kind of stick with him. Did a Jermaine Jackson album?
Huh.
He did pretty much all the Christopher Cross albums, it looks like.
All right, I'm definitely getting a vibe here of subculture.
Hmm.
One subculture or another. This is either Christian or gay.
No.
Well, really, I mean, this is either, don't you think?
Definitely. Well, what, Christopher Cross or?
Well, for no, the producer here.
Yeah, well, definitely Christian.
Which is gonna connect with Christopher Cross.
Yeah.
So something.
He also produced the Birdcage soundtrack. The gay part.
Okay, now see, you didn't even say that before. You said that after I said mine.
Well, that was 1996. Yeah.
All right. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Maybe both.
Maybe.
Donna Summer is both.
Sure.
Donna Summer is way both. The point is that Christopher Cross could connect either way.
Yeah.
You know, look, I just don't think somebody in a cover band
right.
just raises their hand and said, I'd like to make a record. And top LA producers say, okay, I'll cut your record.
Yeah, I don't know.
That just doesn't happen.
I don't know how that, there's, how that connection was.
There's made, some but, yeah. there's some other kind of relating. Some other, you know, I'm not going to say relationship. I'm just going to say relating. Some other common bond.
Sure.
Some other way of saying, oh, hey, look, we get along.
Yep.
We have something in common.
I knew sort of how that happened, but
tell me what you're looking up now.
I'm just looking.
I'll remind you that you're the host of the show.
Yes, I am. On that first Christopher Cross album, listen to the people that got pulled in. Now, this is sort of the, you know, the whole California hoi polloi of recording. Larry Carlton on guitar. You know, it's all these session guys.
Yeah.
Don Henley, vocals and background vocals. Eric Johnson guitar. I wonder if it's that Eric Johnson.
Who's Eric Johnson? What do you mean?
He was like a, let's see if it's him. He kind of became like one of those guitar hero dudes in the late 80s. He was at Texas, but he was, you know, kind of played the, definitely like a Hendrix influenced guitar. But.
I don't remember him. Did he put out a, like one of those neck tapping records?
Yeah, I mean, I think his stuff was a little more tuneful, but, Nicolette Larson on background vocals, Michael McDonald, Michael O'Martian on synthesizer.
Nicolette Larson was a Neil Young contemporary.
Yeah. J.D. Souther. So a lot of those kind of familiar names from...
This is so West Coast inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is peripheral Eagles, too.
Yeah, totally. Eagles, that Eagles Doobie Brothers axis.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's just sort of, you know, obviously the connection there is Warner Brothers too, so I don't know how he got in there. But nevertheless, shall we listen to a little
Ride Like the Wind? I do, because I think Ride Like the Wind has a super distinctive sound. It's got it's that peripheral Steely Dan. You know, there was this period of time where, like, if you picture like if Steely Dan is an airplane and there's all sorts of, like, or a boat and there's all sorts of stuff in its wake, you know, that sounds, it's not exactly the same, but it's super right. similar, and it's got a, like a lot of, then that's what this sort of thing is. It's like hanging on to the sides, it's dragging on its coattails.
It's like a what the hell are those things that eat all the food that the shark
right remora pilot
is,
fish
pilot fish yeah it's one of those
pilot fish
getting all its little scraps.
Now,
his voice is kind of
it's weak. Really it's thin
yeah
reedy
yeah
and that's why it would be natural to think that in the same way as that Gary Shandling was a great comic writer who became a stage comedian, mm-hmm. you would think that Christopher Cross was, well, maybe he was a terrific writer or producer that went recording,
right.
that became a recorder, you know, like recorded his own material, but that's not the case at all.
Right. Yeah, I don't...
Which is why I can't help but think... What's the secondary tie? Is it... That's why I can't help but go, Christian, gay,
maybe
something.
He did have an album later on called, like, Dr. Faith or something like that. This song always reminds me of this great SCTV sketch where Rick Moranis plays Michael McDonald. And, like, he just spends the whole thing, like, running from, like, studio to studio, so he, like... He runs to the studio where they're recording this song, and he does the background vocals, and then he like runs to another studio and does like a Doobie Brothers song, and he just keeps going back and forth. But I also have a personal connection with this album because I never paid money for it, but when I joined the I think it was the Columbia House Record Club, you know, you get like your 11 albums for a penny or whatever, you know, and I'm putting in, like, you know, Scorpions albums and AC/DC and all this shit, and for whatever reason they sent me Christopher Cross, and I remember, like, you know, writing to them like, hey, I didn't order this, and they're like, oh, you can keep it. So I never opened it. It was still, like, in its, you know, plastic and stuff, and I had it like, you know, just with my albums, and I remember I brought them to college. And, you know, so I've got all these stupid, like, you know, hard rock albums, and then all of a sudden, one of my roommates is like, what the fuck is this Christopher Cross here? And I'm like, hey, I never opened it! So, like, for, like, the next 4 years, it was always like, hey, where's that Christopher Cross album? Break that out. Fucking Christopher Cross.
My favorite part of this song is the Michael McDonald backing vocal.
Yeah.
Such a long way to go.
And this was basically like Christopher Cross, like, rocking out.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because
yeah.
when you hear his next song,
oh, I know, you know, God.
It's like the wussiest of the wussy.
Now, something I vividly remember is him performing. Not so much remembering the performance. He performed on, like, the Grammys or something like that. And I remember people reacting to his performance, being shocked at his appearance.
Right.
People being shocked that, like, he looked like a frog, you know?
Because, you know,
people are not wondering, what's this guy going to look
it
like?
It was pre-video.
His record cover.
Yeah.
It just has this, you know, this stupid flamingo on the cover, which, you know, by the way, kind of gay. And then, you know, the next day, saying, like, wow, you know, the guy looks like a frog. He looks a little bit like a, you know, Kermit the Frog showed up and performed on the show.
Yeah, totally. All right. Yeah, so, yeah, I don't know. It was weird. It definitely was incongruous. I mean, you know, this was just before the video revolution happened with MTV, so... you know, this was 2 years before MTV debuted, and, you know, I think he had a video, but I don't think he was, you know, prominent in it. Certainly,
or the video was just flamingos
riding like the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, this came out in December 1979, so, you know, basically 1980 was all, this album was all over the radio. You know, this song hit number two on the charts.
Frog Rock was really popular that year. It's a lot of frogs.
17 weeks.
Making music.
17 weeks on the charts. Ride Like the Wind. The follow-up was Sailing.
Oh, my God. And the problem with Sailing is that it seemed to define a genre of music, much like Beverly Hills Cop. In the same way as Beverly Hills Cop became a genre of music, so did Sailing. Oh, my God.
So bad.
I'm already frightened.
And this, I think, was the real Christopher Cross. That first song really wasn't. It was this kind of wussy stuff.
Just like this, like...
Number one on the charts for 13 weeks. Well, I don't know if it was number one for 13 weeks, but it was on the charts for 13 weeks.
Yeah, this sort of synthesized piano chords. I just feel like... this is sort of... but it's not far down to paradise. Just sort of international language for... doofus.
And, I'm looking at this. I found this interview with him. And, like, his longtime writing partner and friend says, anyone who thinks Chris can play is Sailing doesn't know he started out with a flying V and a Marshall stack and Hair Out to Here. So this guy was a hard rock guy when he started out, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I'm more interested in the attribution to longtime partner.
Trying to see if they have anything about how the hell he got his...
By the way, I would point out that...
look at him.
I would point out this song, still funkier than Journey. This is like what Jonathan Cain was writing for Journey at the time.
Sure.
This is just like a Journey single.
Yeah.
Except more rocking.
Yeah, apparently he was playing a lot of like blues and stuff.
See, this sounds like a a final exam for like a Berkeley student.
Yeah.
This is like Berkeley music. Just like passionless,
clinical,
educated. It's music-y music. Did you hear what he just said? He said every word is a symphony.
Sure. Listen to the strings.
So true.
And his voice is kind of feminine. I mean, isn't it? I mean. But definitely, like, you know, I guess I was probably 12 or 13 when this came out, and I just remember, like, thinking, yeah, this song sucks. Cause I kind of liked Ride Like the Wind. I kind of, you know, I was like, hey,
it's got a beat. Yeah. You can dance to it.
Sure. I like the Michael McDonald, but.
Yeah, you know, it's got bongos. I could see myself playing that.
Sure. But this song was like, oh my God. And it was on the radio, like,
all the time.
And whenever I went to the dentist, there it was.
He was born in 51, which means he was 40 when Nevermind came out.
Right.
What do you suppose his reaction was to Nirvana, Nevermind?
It's like, there goes my career now.
He was not an old man. He was a young man when that record came out.
Here he is in 71. The headband.
It's looks like Mike Love.
That's the MC5.
He doesn't have a. Is he not the one with the mustache? Wait. Which
no,
one?
No, he's
he?
The one with the headband.
Oh, with the headband.
Yeah, long hair.
He looks like he's in the Suite.
Yeah,
he's gonna do.
He opened for Zeppelin.
He's gonna do Teenage. No, he didn't.
according to this.
See, I don't get this. There's a piece of this puzzle missing.
In San Antonio, like his band, they would just, I think they would just get like kind of shitty.
Yeah, that's true.
Bands.
You could do that back then.
Yeah.
You know, like where a promoter would blow into town and say, you know, give me the top band from this club, right. And they just open for Zeppelin.
Right. Yeah. Doesn't mean they went on tour with them, right?
Yeah, right.
Like
right.
Edward Bear, but.
that would happen back then. You get paid with a shoebox full of cash.
Sure. A little cocaine.
Yeah, $400, if that.
Yeah, so like, you know. This was I think he had another single, Never Be the Same. I don't even know what the hell that is, but
well,
do we dare listen to it?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Though, I mean, I also remember he did the theme for the Arthur movie.
Right, that was the next year.
How many singles did he have? Top 40 singles.
This was eight.
He had 8 top 40 singles?
He did.
No.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just exclaiming. I believe you.
You doubted me. No, yeah. Yeah, the Arthur's theme went to number one in 81.
I believe that because I remember the song.
It's No Year of the Cat.
I wonder when he introduces that. I wonder if he, like, when he plays live, does he, like, do a little talky introduction to that? This next song... It was a theme for a movie. It's about an alcoholic.
Girls are good days. Good days. Wait, so we want me to find that other thing, or you want me to go to the Arthur song?
What's the difference?
Well, there are two different songs. Never Be the Same was the next single off of this album. I have to...
Which one do you want to play?
Let's play the Arthur song.
Yeah.
We don't want to torture ourselves too much. It's going to be bad enough.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh boy, this song number one for 3 weeks, 17 weeks on the chat.
Number one for 3 weeks.
This was his biggest song.
This was bigger than either of those other two songs. This is bigger than Sailing and Ride Like the Wind.
Yep, Ride Like the Wind didn't even go to number one. Number two.
You know, this was back in the days when the charts were a complete farce. They made up the charts back then.
They're not making them up now?
No, now it's SoundScan, you know?
I wonder if they got him to work on the Arthur remake. Remember they did an Arthur remake with Russell Brand a couple years ago? We need a wussy song for the theme of this.
That would have been the only way to do an Arthur remake, is just do it completely, you know,
note for note.
Just not just BS, you know, just like tongue in cheek. Or do it like so wrong, you know?
Right.
He's not an alcoholic, he's on heroin. Isn't that funny? We're going to do a love ballad about a heroin addict.
Well, the weird thing about that, too, is Russell Brand is, like, famously...
An addict,
But off of all that stuff. Sure. So I don't know if they, like... I didn't see it, so I don't know if he faked...
Or just make light of it.
Drank fake booze or whatever, but...
Just to make... Yeah, just to completely, like, poke fun at the fact that he's... Ugh.
Yeah, this is bad.
Now, have you seen that movie? Have you seen Arthur?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah.
I just remember a lot. It was a lot of Dudley Moore cackling.
I'm betting that's not a movie that holds up.
I'm sure from it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he was a funny guy.
Dudley Moore was great.
Yeah.
Now, have you...
I always found that movie kind of annoying when I would see it. Just like, you know... Just because he's kind of... I mean, I know it was... You know,
so you've seen it since. You've seen parts of it since then.
I saw, I mean, not for a long time, but you know, it used to be on HBO like all the time.
Right.
So I, you know, sort of see bits and pieces of it. I don't know. I used to get kind of annoyed by.
Have you ever heard the Derek and Clive tapes?
Oh, with him and Peter Cook.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
The object was to actually get as drunk as possible.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
They would get completely hammered and improv these conversations between these alter egos, these characters, Derek and Clive.
Okay.
And they're just utterly hammered. And they would the improv was they were trying to make each other laugh. You know, they were trying to break each other.
Right.
Which is, you know, that's a great object
yeah.
of the game, you know. They're sick tapes. They're really fun. That's how you know how funny
yeah.
Dudley Moore is. Yeah. Hell of a lot more funny than any of this shit. I mean, while we're hearing this, we're looking at this.
Yeah, it's one of those, little one of those stupid movie music montage.
Videos where yeah. it's just a montage of them. Jesus.
I don't know if it's the official. I don't think it was the official video. I think somebody just put it together.
Because I remember they used to do that on MTV every now
and then. In the 80s, it was like, for a while there, it was all you would see. It was like, you know, now from, you know, Bob Seger from Beverly Hills Cop 2, but you would hardly see Seger. You would just see scenes from the movie.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they did that.
It's just a commercial for the movie, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah. And then they would, you know, eventually, like, artists, the actors would appear in the video, like, doing separate stuff, like, you know, dancing around. I remember... What the hell was it?
That's right.
Ghostbusters 2, they were, you know, there was a Bobby Brown song. I know, like, all the, you know, they had a lot of celebrities in it, but, you know, I think they had, like, all the main guys from the Ghostbusters crew there.
Yeah, I remember the one I always remember is, like, Cher and Winona Ryder dancing around in some video.
They were mermaids, or
yeah, it might be. I don't know. I remember, like, really, like, late one night.
I remember
turning on the TV and thinking, like, oh my god, I gotta go to bed. And then, like, but on the TV, what the hell is this? And I was like trying to figure it out. Like,
yeah, it's that song.
This is frightening me. And
does he know or whatever?
Yeah, something. It's like a re-recording of some old 50s yeah. song or something, and and just turning it off and thinking this is going to frighten me. I'm going to have bad dreams about this. Cher, like, trying to pretend she's as young as Winona Ryder.
Jeez. Well, she was her mom in that movie, I think.
Yeah, probably.
I remember where they were filming that when I was interning at a newspaper in 88 and or 89. Actually, I just started the newspaper, and I was living in this sort of suburb of Gloucester, and that's where they were filming that movie. And,
whichever movie that is.
It's
isn't that funny?
I just said that. What the hell was it?
Mermaids is what you said.
Mermaids? Yeah, I think it was Mermaids.
Yeah. But I didn't know that. I would like to figure out if Winona Ryder is older now than Cher was when she made that movie.
Possibly. She's got to be like 40.
Which is just funny.
Yeah.
Because it frightened me when I saw the video. It just kind of scared me.
No, the frightening one was that if I could turn back time where she's on the naval ship and she's wearing, like, freaking that ridiculous outfit. Cher. So, yeah, Christopher Cross. Yeah, this was, like, his biggest hit.
Wow.
Yeah, he had a couple of, a couple more albums, but this was kind of, like, the peak of his career. In 83, he had a top 10 hit with a song called Think of Laura, which was popularized by being played on General Hospital. So I'm going to find that. And, it is.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, you can with you. And of course, you know, on General Hospital at the time, it was the whole Luke and Laura thing. So I don't know if he actually wrote this for the show, but...
Ugh. This is kind of scaring me.
Oh, it's like one of these, like...
Oh, this actually sounds familiar to me. I think I might have heard this song. This is during... What year was this?
83. Maybe you heard it when you were working in a record store or something.
Maybe, I don't know. Oh, that could be. That might be... You know, they told us what to play. We didn't choose what to play in that record store.
I mean, strawberries, right?
Yeah. We had a strict playlist. Ugh. It was just, it was all Paola.
What did you have to play? Like, was it all top 40?
Stuff like this. Yeah. It wasn't even top 40. It was, what was most interesting is the things that would become top 40 after being on that playlist.
because they were being played in record stores all over the country.
I think so. You know, it was just because it was part of like a multi-tiered program of payola.
Right.
You know, it would begin with being in the record store, and then it would move to the radio.
It started off as crapola, it became payola.
Yeah.
This is pretty bad. Ugh. I've never heard this. I don't think.
Wow, I really do think this was something that we had to play.
But yeah, this hit number 9 on the charts.
This is clearly inferior.
Oh yeah.
To in as much as anybody should like Christopher Cross, this is not as good as Sailing.
Right.
Sailing at least has a hook.
It's like socks and stuff. Oh man. What's rock?
Beaver.
Laura.
Laura.
Married his wife Jan in 1988 and divorced in 2007. They have 2 children.
Those poor kids.
And he named one of them Rain.
Aww,
his son Rain, daughter Madison.
I'm sure they stayed in L.A.
I'm guessing he probably makes his living now showing up on those 80s package tours, and you know, I think I saw him on he was on Jimmy Fallon a couple of years ago, and they were sort of doing like a yacht rock thing, and he played Ride Like the Wind with the Roots. But
is he yacht rock?
Yacht rock, which is another word for wuss rock, basically. Yeah, yacht rock's a thing.
Who started yacht rock?
I don't know. Christopher Cross? Standing in the rain.
You are listening to Completely Conspicuous with Jay Kumar.
That was Kinski with Conflict Free Diamonds and Hymnals with When You're Away. Now let's close things out with a couple of songs from albums that came out around the same time as Christopher Cross's debut.
In the days of 39, oh please leave the Vendana open. Federico lockers dead and gone, bullet holes in the cemetery wall. The black car, the body of the beer, vanished bombs on the Costa Rica. I'm dying in on the DC pet tonight. Spanish bombs, you have to get away from Nito. Yes, the quetta, oh my god, I thought. Infinito, yes, the Guerra, oh my god, it's all Spanish weeks in my disco casino. The freedom fighters died up on the hill. They sang the red flag, they wore the black one. After they died, it was Mockingbird Hill. Back from the buses, went up in flashes. Irish too, drenched in blood. Spanish bombs shattered the hotels. A senorita's old is missing. The Spanish bombs, yes, the Guerra Infinito. Yes, the Guerra, oh my god, I thought. Spanish bombs, yes, the Guerra Infinito. Yes, the Guerra, oh my god, I thought. The hillsides ring with Infinito, yes, the Guerra, oh my god, it's on. Spanish bombs, yes, the Guerra Infinito, yes, the Guerra, oh my god, it's on. Like this song. Mother, do you think they'll try to break my balls? Thank you.
just a waste of time. Hush now, baby, baby, don't you cry. Mama's gonna make all of your nightmares come true. Mama's gonna put all of her fears into you. Mama's gonna keep you right here under her wing. She won't let you fly, but she might let you sing. Mama's gonna keep baby cozy and warm. Ooh, babe. Ooh, babe. Of course, mama's gonna help build the wall.
That was Pink Floyd with Mother from the Wall, of course, and The Clash with Spanish Bombs off London Calling, both albums released in late 1979, around the same time as Christopher Cross. And that wraps up episode 325 of Completely Conspicuous. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you'll join me next time when Rick Doobie and I continue our conversation, not only about Christopher Cross, but also some other 1970s-era hitmakers. In the meantime, check out BFF.fm every Friday at its new time slot of 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 Pacific, to hear my new streaming radio show, Stuck in the Garage. Actually, it's not that new anymore. Check out Mixcloud.com/CoomDog to listen to archive shows. The Bedroom Eyes song is a new single, available for free download on Bandcamp. The Hymnal song is also a new single, available for free download on Bandcamp. The Kinski song is on the compilation Crazed MP3 Fans Volume 1, put together by Kill Rock Stars. You can download the comp for free also at Bandcamp. Jay Breitling produced the opening and closing themes of the show. Voiceover work is courtesy of James Grailian. Completely Conspicuous is a Tan God production.